We'll listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers.
I'm Ronnie Allen. A few weeks ago, I was going through my old VHS tapes, and I came across and decided to watch the 1959 Alan Freed movie called Go, Johnny, Go, which featured singers Jimmy Clanton, Chuck Berry, and Sandy Stewart, among others. My favorite portion of the film is where Sandy is in a studio recording this song.
Hey, mate, come out and play with me. And bring your dolly free. Climb up my apple tree. Look down my rainbow. Fly down my celadon. And we'll be jolly, jolly friends forevermore.
After watching her sing it and absolutely loving it, I shut off my VCR and immediately sprung into action. 1 hour later, Sandy Stewart was singing Playmates on our Jersey Girls Sing message and video board, as that performance became our prestigious music video of the day. Sandy had a big hit single called My Coloring Book, which was nominated for a Grammy Award. Now, I knew about that, but other than that and her film appearance, I hardly knew anything else about this talented lady's amazing career, which includes having been married to a renowned composer whose legendary songs you are familiar with, and having toured and recorded for years with her Grammy-winning son. I am so delighted to walk down memory lane with her as we share with you so many magical musical moments. Yes, I love alliteration. Okay, drummer, do your thing. Welcome to the show, Sandy Stewart.
Thank you, Ronnie, for that wonderful introduction. That was terrific.
Your professional history is definitely much more than Playmates and My Coloring Book, because over the years, it's a recounting of the big band era, the heyday of nightclubs, the early days of TV entertainment, and of course the great American songbook. And you put them all together and you have Sandy Stewart.
You have my life.
You have, this is your life, Sandy Stewart.
This is, and it's your just life, a, right.
You came from Philadelphia?
I was born in Philadelphia. My parents were born in Philadelphia. My brothers were born in Philadelphia. My cousins, my aunts and uncles, we are all Philadelphia natives. And just growing up in Philadelphia alone is like growing up in a major song fest. There are so many musical, talented people that came from Philadelphia. And fortunately, I was surrounded by all this terrific music, whether it was Eugene Normandy conducting the Philadelphia Orchestra or the opera, which I would go to because my mother's youngest sister was an opera buff, and she took me to the opera. And my mother's middle sister had aspired to be a performer in show business. So when I showed an interest at a very early age, I guess I was 5 years old, they told me, and I would tell people in the summertime to turn off their lights on their porches, and I would come out and put my light on and sing. And one of the songs that I would sing was Playmates, because that was the first song that my mom taught me.
Talking about Philadelphia, did you know Al Martino?
Yes, I certainly did. And the Four Aces, and Bobby Rydell, and Fabian, and all of them.
Did you know the DeJohn sisters?
Yes, I did.
I just interviewed Dux.
Did you really?
The surviving member of that duo.
Yeah,
and
they were terrific.
I did what may very well be the very last interview with Al Martino.
Really?
Wonderful gentleman.
Al was a great guy.
You were doing a radio show at age 9.
I remember doing a kiddie program at WPEN Radio with Joe Grady and Ed Hurst. Wow, it goes back a long time. And it was called Jackie Kane's juvenile variety show. And every Sunday, Jackie would do a live radio broadcast with a bunch of talented kids, and we would get paid in LP albums. They'd have a whole bunch of them on the table. Oh. And after the show, he said, pick whatever you want. I remember that very vividly.
Right.
And I was 9 and 10 years old at the time. When I was 10 years old, I sang at a huge venue at the Broadwood Hotel. That was the first time I had ever sung in front of a gigantic audience. I was the opening act. Senor Wences, I remember, was on the bills. He was wonderful. And I opened the show with a song called Civilization.
Bongo, bongo, bongo? Is that?
Yep, you got it. And I was 10 years old.
And a couple of years later, you were a band singer.
At the age of 12, there was two local bands that I sang with, dressing up as an older girl with eyelashes, makeup, and falsies in my bra, so I looked like I was an older girl. And I was the band singer for Abe Neff's orchestra, which was a big local orchestra, and Al Frazetto and his band.
And then, at the age of 14, you got fired by a beer company.
Local beer company in Philly called the Gretz Beer Company. They had a Thursday evening talent show. I had auditioned for it, and unbeknownst to my parents, I got on the train and went to the station. I saw the ad, the paper. They're looking for singers to compete in Miss Gretz Beer's contest. So I took my mother's lipstick and a pair of her high heels and dressed up and went into the studio and sang, and I became Miss Gretz Beer because my family wrote the most postcards and I won.
But you lied about your age, didn't you?
Oh, I had to, because I was 14 at the time.
Yeah.
And when I auditioned for them, they said, would you mind if we lied your age a couple of years because we have a beer sponsor here? And I said, oh, sure, guy. All I cared about was that I wanted to be on television. I didn't want to drink beer. I had told them I was 16 when I went for the audition. I was 14, and they said, can we up your age to 18? And I said, absolutely.
Yeah.
I didn't care, you know. I wanted to be in showbiz, and this was my big chance. So I was on the show with other contestants, and the deal was that if you won the contest, you became the hostess of the show wearing a gold lame tutu, a fake diamond tiara, and a ribbon that went across your chest that said Miss Gretz Beer, and high heel gold shoes that I could barely walk in. I was used to wearing saddle shoes and one of those skirts with 5,000 crinolines inside. That was the look in those days. The idea was that whoever sent in the most postcards naming the person of your choice that they wanted to win on that particular show won the contest.
Right.
And I remember my mother's sisters, my dad, cousins, for 2 days writing penny postcards. And we won the contest.
Now you did it for a few weeks, and I think around the third week.
Something like that. I know it was a six-week thing if you were on the show. And it's funny, and then they would have a guest appearance on the show as well. Once you became the hostess, you introduced an up-and-coming talent. And at that time, one of the shows had Edie Gourmet, and Edie and I became fast friends, and Steve Lawrence, her husband, ultimately a couple of years later, when we were all in New York and working, and we were all very young. We were teenagers. She was doing Steve Allen with Andy Williams and Steve, and I was working with Ernie Kovacs on his television show at the time.
I understand that your reign ended with a backstage visit.
The owner of the company approached me. He said, I just want you to know that we think you are the best Gretz Beer hostess we've ever had, and we love the fact that you're doing the show. By the way, how old are you? And I said, 14. And he said, you're fired. Anyway. So that was the end of that job. It lasted 3 weeks. Certainly, I understood why, but I was heartbroken that I couldn't finish out my win of the Miss Gretz Beer Contest. But that's okay. I went on to bigger and better.
Oh, yes, you did. I want to ask you about a couple of records that you made. What was the very first record?
My very first record was done in New York with an all-star band, and it was produced by Bernie Lowe. Remember Bernie? Because he discovered Chubby Checker from Philly and that whole gang. And Artie Singer was my voice coach. Nat Siegel was my personal manager. I was 16 years old, and I had just auditioned for Abe Lasfogel at the William Morris office, and they signed me to a contract, and I made this really dumb song. It was called Do Ya, Do Ya, Do Ya.
Well, Sandy, I searched high and low, and I just couldn't find a copy of it. So could you do me a little favor and just sing a few notes of it, give me and others an idea of what it sounded like?
Do you, do you, do you, do you wanna, have a little talk. It was so dumb.
Sandy, I want to assure you and everyone else, I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you. That was from around 1952, before rock and roll.
Yeah.
Interesting.
They were doing the triplets then.
Sandy, I just checked. That was on the 20th Century label. Moving forward 3 years to 1955, I found this recording that you did for the X label. That's the letter X. Over a three-year period, you were on several labels.
They had me all over the place.
The record I have here is called Puddin' and Pie. Sounded like you were doing your best Georgia Gibbs. The arrangement was very similar to Tweedly D.
That's true. Yeah, very good, very good, because she had that big hit at the time.
Yeah, Tweedly D. Yeah. Bum, bum, bum.
Exactly.
Bum, ba-dum,
and
bum.
Who wrote Puddin' and Pie?
I am glad you asked that. Believe it or not, it was a gentleman named Winfield Scott who also wrote Tweedly D.
It's really funny that you caught that, because
yeah,
that's exactly how that happened. It was not my choice, believe me. Either was Do Ya, Do Ya, Do Ya.
Since I happen to have this one, let's just hear a small portion of your delectable rendition of Puddin' and Pie. Her nibs, Miss Sandy Stewart.
Humpty-um-bum-bum. Kiss me once. Humpty-um-bum-bum. Kiss me twice. Kiss me once and kiss me twice, and loving you is paradise. Oh my, a puddin' and puddin' and pie. A puddin' and puddin' and puddin' and puddin' and pie. Kiss me quick before I cry. A puddin' and puddin' and puddin' and puddin' and mine. Sweet as honeysuckle on the vine.
Before we go from Puddin' and Pie to Playmates and talk about the Alan Freed movie that you had a big role in, I wanted to ask you if you ever appeared on Bandstand. The Bandstand show actually originated in Philadelphia, hosted by Bob Horn.
Who I knew very well, and I was on that show before Dick Clark became the mentor. Bob was the one that invented Bandstand. It was his idea. It was his baby. He would introduce kids dancing on camera and introduce new talent, mostly from Philadelphia, by the way. And that's how he started that whole thing. And he got in trouble with the law. That was the end of his career, unfortunately. He was a very nice man. And then, of course, it went to Dick Clark, which became a national
institution,
TV show.
So to speak.
And then Alan Freed picked up on it in New York, and
New
he
York,
had his
yes,
own
exactly.
version of Bandstand
yeah.
there.
Right.
And I did all of the shows. I remember Dick, when he first started, sitting in a tiny radio station, a booth, that was about as big as a small bathroom would be, with a turntable and a light and a little desk to put some notes on. And when I first met him and I was promoting a record that I had done, we would just sit there in the studio next to each other. There wasn't any more room for another person.
Very small room.
Very small.
In fact, maybe what you didn't know, maybe it was a small bathroom, actually. Who knows?
No, I would have noticed that.
But, you know, I think it's fair to say, Sandy, that before you actually had your career, you already had a career, it seems. You were doing so much. So impressed.
It just seems to me I was always working.
That's for sure. Sandy, how did you get the part in the 1959 Alan Freed movie called Go Johnny Go, which featured Jimmy Clanton, Chuck Berry, and you?
I had been doing a lot of guest appearances at the time on Ed Sullivan and Steve Allen's show and Jack Parr's late night show. And the producer of the film, who was Alan Freed and his associates, had apparently been watching my career at the time. And they said, we need a fresh-faced young woman who can act and sing and could be the love interest for Jimmy Clanton in this movie. So they approached my manager at the time and the William Morris office, who also represented me, and that's how that happened. They met me and we talked, and he said, we're going to do this at the Hal Roach Studios in California, and we would like you to be the lead female in the film. And that's how that happened.
You didn't have to have any screen tests or anything?
No, I didn't, because they had been watching me on the screen with these different appearances that I was doing at the time.
We're going to talk about Playmates right now. Now, you mentioned that that was a song that you used to sing several years earlier.
Well, I love the song because my mother taught it to me when I was 3 years old, and that was my favorite song as a child. So when we started to figure out who was going to sing what in the film, other than the guest appearances of all the rock and roll talent that was in the movie, I said, how about if we do a rock and roll version of my childhood song, Playmates? And they said, how does it go? And I sang it to them. They said, that would really work. Let's put it in the act. Let's do it. And that's how that happened.
The movie was shot very, very quickly, I understand.
The movie was shot, other than the main characters, Chuck Berry, Alan Freed, Jimmy Clanton, and myself, that was shot in 5 days, all the dialogue, the libretto of the film. The guest appearances were done in separate shootings at different times. When they did their in-one performance without us in the picture. Chuck Berry did a couple of things with us in the picture, and you would have to see it to see what I'm talking about.
Richie Valens was in the movie, too.
Yes, it was his last performance before he had that terrible, fateful accident with the airplane. That happened after he shot his song that he does in the film. I think it was called Ooh My Head.
It was almost like a Little Richard type of a song, like Ooh Soul, that type of thing.
Yeah, it was.
The song Playmates, by the way, originated many, many years earlier, 1940. It was a hit record by Kay Kaiser and his orchestra. Here's the audio of my favorite scene from the motion picture, Go Johnny Go.
Yeah, nice, but can she sing?
Playmate, come out and play with me. And bring your dollies free. Climb up my apple tree. Look down my rain barrel. Slide down my cellar door. And we'll be jolly, jolly friends forevermore.
rock. I love that. I could watch it again and again and again. In fact, I have watched it again and again and again. Interesting. Folks, watch that on YouTube. Don't just listen to it. After you're done listening to this interview, go to YouTube and watch that segment. And there's a saxophone player in there. He's not really a saxophone player. He's an actor, right?
No, he's an actor.
I was looking at the notes that he was supposedly playing, and they didn't seem to correspond.
Well, I really don't think he could play a saxophone.
I know. But
they
he hired him to be a pretend saxophone player.
Exactly.
I'm Ronnie Allen talking to Sandy Stewart. How did you meet Moose Charlap, your eventual husband?
Moose was also born in Philadelphia, and so were his parents, and he was a Phi Beta Kappa at the time, going to the University of Pennsylvania and writing a Broadway show for Mary Martin and other songs that he was doing at the time. And he would rent a room in the same building that I would take my voice lessons. Mm. It was called 20th Century School of Music. I believe it was on Locust Street in Philly. Mm-hmm. And Moose was upstairs in one of the rehearsal rooms, and each room was kind of like Carnegie Rehearsal Hall. People that may be familiar with the setup in Carnegie Hall, there are studios above the actual theaters there that musicians can rent out to rehearse in or practice, etc. And it was kind of that kind of setup. And I was on the second floor doing my thing, and Moose was on the third floor, and it was very distracting to me to hear these songs that I was hearing because I had never heard them. And I asked my voice teacher, Artie Singer was his name, and Artie said, oh, he's a very talented young man, and he's writing all kinds of things. And I said, do you think he would mind if I knocked on the door and said hello? Now, I was 12 years old at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He was 21. And I knocked on the door, and he said, who is it? He had a voice like Albert Lee. I said, my name is Sandy, and I'm a singer. He says, oh, yeah? What kind of songs do you sing? I said, I like to sing ballads. And he said, come in, sing something. I want to hear how you sing. I remember this like it was yesterday. And he said, what are you working on now? I said, a song called Don't Blame Me. By the way, my son Bill Charlap, who is a top great talent,
piano
who
player,
won a Grammy last year with Tony Bennett, we were talking about this yesterday. He said, Mom, the year you were born, there were so many great songs that were written. And I said, I know, and Don't Blame Me was one of them. And that's the song that I was working on. And he said, you start to sing, and then I'll follow you. And that's what happened. And I sang, and he followed along, and he said, you sing very well. And he said, would you consider working with me on some songs that I'm writing? Because my voice sounds like a piece of Brillo pad on a slate board, and I would love to pay you. I said, you would pay me to do that? He said, I'll pay you $5 a song. Well, $5 a song, you could buy a steak dinner for $5 in a very fancy restaurant.
Back then,
in those
yes.
days. That's right. So I was thrilled, and it turned out that years later, fast forward a long time, we fell in love, we got married, and him saying to me, when I left the school that day, I went home and I said to my mother, this is Moose talking to his mother, I met a little girl today. She's 12 years old, and she sounds like an old lady. And he didn't mean that as a derogatory
no.
statement. He meant she sounds like she
mature.
Knows what she's singing
mature,
about,
yeah, right.
you know? And that's how our relationship started, just
wow.
strictly, naturally, business relationship. I was a child. And years later, he was in New York working, writing the score for Mary Martin, and I was working in New York at the time, and we met again when I was 21, and he was 30 at the time. And we fell in love and got married.
Now, speaking of Peter Pan,
right.
Moose wrote most of the songs with a lady named Carolyn Lee. For Peter Pan, Moose wrote the music, and Carolyn Lee, who, by the way, also wrote Young at Heart and Witchcraft for Frank Sinatra, she wrote the lyrics. And right now, Here's a medley of those songs from the TV production of Peter Pan that you know and love so well.
Now, sing your goodnight song and into your bed.
Tender shepherd, let me help you count your sheep. One in the meadow, two in the garden, three in the nursery. And I see in myself all the wonderful things that I see. If I'm pleased with myself, I have every good reason to be. I gotta crawl. I'm just the cleverest balance was ever my fortune to know. I caught a twig to my shadow to stick to the tip of my toe. I gotta crawl. Doodle and ride like a bird so naturally. When I discover the cleverness of a remarkable me, how can I hide it when deep down inside it just tickles me so?
Songs from the show. What you heard was from the 1960 TV production of Peter Pan, starring Mary Martin in the title role. You heard excerpts from Tender Shepherd, I Got a Crow, I'm Flying, and I Won't Grow Up. Moose must be a nickname, I would assume.
Yes, it is. When I first started to date him, I said, how the heck did you get a name like that? And he said, I was a very feisty kid, because Moose was not a tall, burly guy. He was very dynamic, And his personality was that. That's how he got the name Moose. Because he was a very forceful personality. Years later, when we had been married for some time, I was interviewed by a newspaper guy. And he said, "What is it like being married to Moose Charlap?" And I said, "It's like being married to a low-yield atomic weapon. You never know when it's going to go off." He was quite dynamic and unfortunately passed away much, much too young. He was only in his mid-40s.
The year was what, 1974?
74, right.
Now, in the 50s, you were doing a lot of TV work, and that included being on the Eddie Fisher Show.
Yes, Eddie Fisher had a show sponsored by Coca-Cola. It was a 15-minute show in the 50s.
Coke time?
Coke time, right. And he would have guest singers on the show. And he was also on the Horn and Hardart show when we were children. Even though Eddie was a bit older than I was, we were both on that kiddie program.
What years were you working with Benny Goodman?
I worked with Benny in 1960 and in 61.
Were you his girl singer?
Yes, I was. I was traveling on the road with him. We did a cross-country tour, and he was not the most pleasant man to work for.
That was my next question. Nobody doubts that he was one of the greatest musicians of all time.
Without question. Brilliantly talented musician.
Personality-wise, was a little bit...
It led a lot to be desired. But anyway, that's a whole different story. And
no one's perfect.
Nobody's perfect, that's right.
But did he actually invite you to join his band?
Yes. After seeing me on TV, he contacted my manager and gave me an offer I couldn't refuse. I didn't even want to work that particular summer.
I've heard that line somewhere.
Godfather
connection,
right.
Yeah.
Did Benny Goodman ever
give you personally a hard time?
Oh, yes. He would call rehearsals the next day when we had been on the road for weeks, unnecessary rehearsals, when we had been in a bus all night during the day, have the whole band come in instead of letting us rest, which we needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just do ridiculous things.
And then you became a regular on the Perry Como Show. I found something that I want to play right now, and it shows another side of your vocal career, so to speak. On the Perry Como Show, you did a song from Mr. President, which was a musical written by Irving Berlin.
It was his last musical.
His last musical, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
And you did a song called, I'm chuckling just as I say this, "The Secret Service Makes Me Nervous." Did I get that title right?
Perfect.
The Secret Service makes me nervous. When I am dating, they are waiting to observe us. When I get ready to hold steady for the kiss you plant, the Secret Service makes me nervous and I can't. They're always spying, no denying. They're always peeping, gumshoe creeping, private eyeing. When I'm beginning to give inning like a maiden aunt, the Secret Service makes me nervous and I can't. I've been exposed beyond control, just like a goldfish in a bowl. The president's daughter must drink water, no drink of scotch, she might do what she hadn't ordered. When I'm ignited, so excited that I start to pant, the Secret Service makes me nervous when my lamps are lit. And I say, this is it. The Secret Service makes me nervous and I can't. The Secret Service makes me nervous. Those White House dicks get all their kicks when they observe us. Just as I wind up, make my mind up not to say I won't. The Secret Service makes me nervous and I don't. When things look rosy, they get nosy. They'll say there's Tootsie playing footsie, very cozy. My pulse goes higher, I'm on fire, shaking at the knees. The Secret Service makes me nervous and I freeze. Whatever I may do or say,
will be reported the next day. When I'm reported, it's distorted. They don't see clearly when I'm merely being courted. When I'm just necking, simply pecking with a Cary Grant, they stand behind me to remind me who and what I am. When I don't give a... Ooh, the Secret Service makes me nervous and I can't.
That's the Secret Service. Makes me nervous. We're going to go to 1962 now and talk about your big hit single, My Coloring Book. And I believe that Don Costa produced that recording session. Is that correct?
He produced the record under the auspices of Moose and Don. They came to New York together, and they were actual roommates before anything was going on in their careers. And he called Don because I had done it on the Perry Como show. Fred Ebb and John Kander were writing special material for my dear friend Kay Ballard, who was on the show with me on a weekly basis. And on occasion, Perry would feature one of us in a solo performance. And Fred and John ran into the rehearsal one day and said, "Kay, we have a great new song for you. It's called My Coloring Book." And Kay looked at the song and she said, "Are you kidding me? This is not going to work for me. No one would believe me." She's known for her comedy.
Yes.
And she said, "Give it to Sandy. Let her do it when Perry lets her do her solo bit."
Ah.
And they did. Kay and I speak at least twice a week.
Fred Ebb, incidentally, was the co-writer of the song The Little Blue Man. And in fact, Fred Ebb was the Little Blue Man on that Betty Johnson hit. It was not Hugh Downs. So many people think it was Hugh Downs because you did it with Betty on TV, but it was actually the co-writer, Fred Ebb. When did you marry Moose?
We got married in 1962.
The year of my coloring book, the year when you recorded My Coloring Book.
That's right. And he had called Don Costa the day after I did it live for the first time on the Como show, which you can see on YouTube, that performance. And he called Don and he said, "We've got to get Sandy into a studio immediately." We were in the studio within a week and Don did the arrangement. And he called Don, "I think she could have a hit with this song."
Right.
And we did.
For those who fancy coloring books, and lots of people do, here's a new one for you. A most unusual coloring book, the kind you never see. Crayons ready? Very well. Begin to color me. These are the eyes that watched him as he walked away. This is the room I sleep in, and all
my coloring book made it to number 20 on the Billboard magazine Hot 100. And you had a little bit of competition with a lady named Kitty Callan.
And Barbara Streisand.
Yeah.
Right.
You and Kitty kind of sold pretty similarly, and you kind of wiped out Barbara, who was not that well-known an entertainer at that time. You sold many more copies of that song than Barbara did, and I guess she was crying in her beer after that, in her Gretz beer.
She doesn't have to cry anymore. She's beer. Doing very well.
Mentioning Kitty Callan, who was a fine talent, you did something that Kitty did not do. You got a Grammy Award nomination for your performance.
Yes, that's true. Kitty and I knew each other, and she was a wonderful gal, and she was also from Philadelphia. Amazing.
You lost to Ella Fitzgerald, but then again, that award, the Female Vocalist Award, the Grammy Awards we're talking about, probably should have been called the Ella Fitzgerald Female Vocalist Award, because
really?
She won that award in 1959, 1960.
Yeah.
In 1961, she won for Best Album Female, Best Single Female. They had the awards separate at that time, both for Mack the Knife. She lost to Judy Garland in 1962. But 1963, the year that you were nominated, it was an album, Ella Swings Brightly with Nelson. Nelson referring
Nelson
to
Riddle.
Mr. Riddle, yes. But just to be nominated.
That was the thrill of my career.
It had to be.
To be in the same list as Ella. We're just celebrating, a lot of artists are doing celebrations to Ella's 100th year. It's her birthday. This week was her 100th birthday.
Absolutely.
There's nobody like Ella. The bar was about as high as it gets. I met her many times and would go to hear her sing in person. She was a great, kind, wonderful lady with a voice that was like an angel.
Right.
Absolutely incredible.
You also recorded an album called My Coloring Book. One of my favorite songs from the album is a song that was a hit for Rosemary Clooney, recorded by many, many people, kind of a traditional folk song called Beautiful Brown Eyes. And right now, ladies and gentlemen, I present Sandy Stewart doing that song.
Beautiful, beautiful.
beautiful brown eyes.
Never love blue eyes again. We did the coloring book album. The song was on the chart, and Don said, let's go in the studio and do a color album where every song is about a color. Green Sleeves is in it, Little White Lies, Little Girl Blue. Each song has a color associated with it.
But one of the songs you did not do was Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini.
No, but I did the original demonstration record on that.
I did not know that, folks. You're going to think this was a setup. I did not know that. Amazing.
Bozer called me and he said, I have a song that I think could be a big hit. You want to do the demo? I said, sure.
Wow.
And that was the song.
How many children did you and Moose have together?
We had two children, and Moose had two children that I brought up from his first marriage, and they all grew up together. My daughter, Anne, who was Moose's daughter from his first marriage, is an engineer, not a train, but a chemical engineer.
Oh, okay.
Tom, her brother, is a jazz bass player. Bill, of course, is a great jazz pianist. And my daughter, Catherine, is a psychologist with a private practice in New York City. Two boys and two girls.
Tell me about Bill's initial interest in the piano. He started playing at the age of three?
3 years old, he would walk up to the piano, nose high, put his hands up on the keyboard, and most little children will just hit the piano just to get a sound out of it. Mm-hmm. And he actually never did that. He would watch his father, too. Moose would be home composing, and he would watch him play the piano. And he knew that you didn't abuse the instrument. Each key had a finger that pressed down and made a sound. And he wrote a little song, in fact, when he was about 4 or 5 years old, and that he played for me on the piano. But Bill is more into not writing so much, but of taking what a writer has done and elaborating on it musically with his trio, which is now in its 20th year.
So,
it is wonderful. And he's been nominated for several Grammy Awards and finally won something with the thing that he did with Tony Bennett,
we're
the song
play
with Jerome Kern.
Yeah, the Silver Lining. We're
going
to play a track from that a little bit later on. After you became a mother, did you continue performing?
Well, I took off from actually traveling and performing because I felt that when you're a mother, you have to make sure that those formative years are good, strong years with strong parental guidance. So the things that I would do would be a lot of voiceover commercials, which kept me in New York. And I would do backers auditions for Moose. If he was writing a show, I would be the female singer doing the songs that he wrote to raise money for the Broadway show that he was writing. So that's about what I did until he passed away. And once he passed away, I started to work because I had to get my children through school and, you know, be a breadwinner again. It worked out very well.
A lot of people who were initially just familiar with you from that Alan Freed movie, they thought you were a rock and roll singer. But you never really felt like a rock and roll singer, did you?
Well, I never was interested in being a rock and roll singer. I wanted to be a traditional jazz-oriented singer, like an Ella, like Chris Connor, like Peggy Lee. Just a good singer that told a good story with a good song.
And this is what you've been doing starting around 1974.
I did remarry 12 years after that. I married George Trufan, who I had met while working with Benny Goodman's band before I married Moose. And I ended up marrying George in 1986, and we were married for 21 years. He was a great trumpet player.
I have several recordings that we're going to play, which are much more representative of the singer that you became over the years. In 1985, you did an album with the great Dick Hyman.
Oh, I loved doing that one.
And this was dedicated to the songs of Jerome Kern?
That's right.
Similar to a different album that came out a few years later that is very close to your heart.
Which is the Grammy Award-winning album that Bill produced and played on with Tony Bennett, and it's all songs of Jerome Kern,
yeah.
And Bill had been listening to these songs since he was a young kid, so he was very familiar with all the material when Tony asked him to do this with him.
But Dick Hyman, a great piano player, the interesting thing is the biggest hit single that Dick Hyman ever had was the theme from the Three Penny Opera. And just listening to that, you get no idea of the man's versatility. Almost anybody could play. Da, 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 da.
Oh, right.
Da,
right.
Da. I mean, it's really Mac the Knife as well. Dick Hyman, like your son, both of them, piano virtuosos.
Absolutely.
I picked out a song from the Sandy Stewart, Dick Hyman collaboration, Pick Yourself Up.
Nothing's impossible, I have found. For when my chin is on the ground, I pick myself up, dust myself off, start all over again. Don't lose your confidence if you slip. Be grateful for a pleasant trip and pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again. Work like a soul inspired till the battle of the day is won. You may be sick and tired, but you'll be a man, my son. Will you remember the famous men who had to fall to rise again? So take a deep breath, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again.
Pick myself up, because that's what I have to do a lot. I pick myself up.
Don't we all?
I think we all do. We got another CD now. This is from 1994. Sandy Stewart and Family.
Bill is playing piano. Tom is playing bass. And George Trifon, my husband, Bill's stepfather, is on trumpet and flugelhorn on that album.
The one that you picked out is one of my favorites, the Cole Porter song, most associated with Mary Martin.
My Heart Belongs to Daddy.
But when I do, I don't follow through, 'cause my heart belongs to Daddy. If I invite a boy some night to dine on my fine spinning hattie, I just adore his asking for more. But my heart belongs to Daddy. Yes, my heart belongs to Daddy. So I simply couldn't be bad. Yes, my heart belongs to Daddy. Da, 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 da. So I want. My heart belongs to Daddy, 'cause my daddy treats it so well. sharp when playing my harp, but my harp belongs to thee. Though other dames at football games may long for a strong undergraddy, I'd never dream.
Daddy. Sorry about that, Mommy. That's the way it goes. I love the song. I always,
it's a great
love the song. And
Mary
Martin, what a fantastic talent she was.
She was something else.
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
We're going to play one more from the album Sandy Stewart and Family, and it features your late husband, George Trufant, on trumpet and flugelhorn. This song was written by two highly respected and very prolific composers, Burton Lane and Frank Lesser. Moments Like This.
Dance.
like this.
About the Great American Songbook, and personifying that, we have Sandy Stewart here right now, and you are definitely one of the most versatile performers that I have ever interviewed, and I say that really with all my heart. You didn't tell me to say that.
That's no. Very sweet.
I mean it seriously. You just do all sorts of music. Probably a good thing that Puddin' and Pie and Playmates didn't become hits, otherwise you may have been doing a lot more rock and roll. When you think about it, both of those songs served their purpose, but I know what your preference is.
Yes, it was a very short-lived period in my career because it didn't have my heart,
right.
You know. The American Songbook has my heart, and
absolutely.
That's why I continue to work today, because of those songs. They tell a great story, all of them. And, of course, my son carries the torch for that as well.
Absolutely does. And I want to point out that one of my closest friends is Peggy King. Do you know Peggy, by the way?
We haven't seen each other in
many years.
But she's a wonderful singer. Always loved her.
And she's in her mid-80s right now, and she performs the Great American Songbook. And I want to thank a gentleman named Anthony DeFlorio, who is very close to Peggy. And Anthony helped me make the connection here.
He's a wonderful man, and he just loves what he does. And he finds all these wonderful clips of people that are not known anymore and puts it out there on YouTube. And he's a terrific guy.
Okay.
Anthony, thank you for all the things you do for so many people.
We're winding down the show. We got just three more recordings to play, and one of them is not by you. In fact, we're going to get to that one that is not by you right now. It is by Tony Bennett and Bill Charlap, and it's a track from their Grammy-winning album. This album was not a Tony Bennett album. It was a Tony Bennett, Bill Charlap album. Your son got equal artist billing, and he didn't just play the piano on it.
He produced it and did the arrangements on it, and his wife, my daughter-in-law, Renee Rosnes, is also playing on it, without question one of the greatest jazz pianists living today, as well as my son. They do concerts together, and they also do separate gigs with their own groups. Renee just won a Juno Award, which is the highest award you can get in Canada, equal to a Grammy in this country. The two of them have their mantles full of these wonderful awards. Well deserved.
Prior year, it was Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga.
That's right.
Tony does not mind sharing billing.
He's very gracious. Man. He loves to paint and to sing, and that's been his whole life, and he just loves it.
This album is called The Silver Lining, the songs of Jerome Kern. It won in the category of Best Traditional Pop Album in the Grammys.
That's right.
And
I figured
that a good song to play would be kind of like the title song, Tony Bennett and Bill Charlap. This is from their Grammy Award winning album, The Silver Lining. This is called Look For the Silver Lining.
Look for the silver lining when there a cloud appears in the blue. Remember, somewhere the sun is shining, and so the right thing to do is make it shine for you. A heart full of joy and gladness will always banish sadness and strife. So always look for the silver lining and try to find the sunny side of life. Thank you. a heart full of joy and gladness will always banish sadness and strife. So always look for the silver lining and try to find the sunny side of life.
Tony and Bill, look for the silver lining. And speaking of looking, we are looking at the end of the show. And I am looking at an album that you did with your son Bill called Something to Remember. I believe the year was, let me check. Yeah, the year was 2012. And this Sandy Stewart, Bill Charlap album is very much representative of what you are doing today. Did I get everything right, Sandy?
Absolutely on the money.
Okay.
Perfect.
I want my gold star in the mail.
You're getting it.
Thank you. Speaking of what you're doing today, how often do you perform?
Actually, today I'm preparing a show that I'm singing with Artie Azenzer, who was Liberace's arranger and conductor for several years way back when, and Artie lives here in Florida where I'm living currently. We're doing a show on Mother's Day at the Wick Theater here in Boca Raton, and then we're doing jazz in July and celebrating my 80th birthday, July 10th.
Happy
and
birthday,
celebrating
in advance. Wow, that's
Dick Hyman's 90th birthday,
oh,
and
gosh,
Bill's 50th birthday, and the three of us are celebrating with a concert that we're doing in New York on the
that's
18th
terrific.
Of July. Well, I do about four or five things a year. I love what I'm doing now.
Wow.
And, of course, working with my son is such an extraordinarily special thing. People always say, what's it like? Well, what do you think?
The song Somebody Loves Me was written in 1924, has music by George Gershwin and lyrics by Ballard MacDonald and Buddy DeSilva. And by the way, it was featured in George White's Scandals of 1924.
I do it a lot with Bill when we perform, when we do shows. We do the verse and the chorus. I'm a big advocate of doing a verse of a song because it sets up the song. Very important. That's one of the things I taught Bill at a very early age. I said, you're going to be a wonderful jazz musician, but I want you to learn the lyrics to all these songs because it'll take you where you want to go musically. And this is now what he teaches his students at the University of William Patterson in New Jersey.
Wow.
He is the head jazz professor there. He tells all these wonderfully talented young musicians, he said, learn the lyrics of the song. It tells you how to phrase it. It tells you the emotional impact it could have. All those things, even though you don't utter a word, it helps you a lot to understand what you're playing musically.
When the world began, it was heaven's plan. There would be a girl for every single man. To my great regret, someone has upset heaven's pretty program, for we never met. I'm clutching at straws just because I may meet him yet. Somebody loves me, I wonder who. I wonder who he can be. Somebody loves me, I wish I knew. Worries me, for every guy who passes by, I shout, hey, maybe you were meant to be my loving baby. Somebody loves me, I wonder who, maybe it's you, baby. Maybe it's you.
Well, Sandy, we got one more song, plus bonus tracks, of course. I just can't thank you enough. This has just been such a joy for me. Prior to actually doing research for this show, I knew about Playmates, I knew about my coloring book, and I knew very little else.
Well, now you know a lot more. You're right, Ronnie.
Yeah. And I'm just so glad to share with my listeners what I have found out about you. Sandy, I want to wish you the best of health, happiness, and continued success, and in advance, a very happy 80th birthday. You're not like Jack Benny. You didn't stop at 39.
No, I should have, but I didn't.
Wish we all could. From the motion picture Pinocchio, that's where this came from. Of course, Cliff Edwards, as Jiminy Cricket,
yes,
sang this in that Disney film, Pinocchio
and
Show.
So beautifully. Oh,
beautiful,
it just touches
song.
Your heart.
Music by Lee Harline and lyrics by Ned Washington and an Academy Award winner for Best Song. And Sandy, thank you from the bottom of my heart.
And you're very, very welcome, Ronnie. It was my great joy and pleasure to talk to you and to learn what you're about as well. Thank you very much.
When you wish upon a star, makes no difference who you are. Anything your heart desires will come to you.
The show. And now I present a couple of bonus tracks. Early in the show, we heard a little bit of a rock and roll song called Puddin' and Pie. Well, the flip side was totally different, a ballad in which Sandy Stewart harmonized with herself. Right now, I am pleased to play that entire recording. Here's In Nuevo Laredo. Finally, several of you wrote to me and told me that you loved Sandy's performance of Playmates from the Alan Freed film Go Johnny Go, and that you also loved her performance of this tune from the same film. Here's Sandy singing Heavenly Father.
Thank you. you.